Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
I'm going to be really candid with you guys in this moment and tell you what I just told Jake during the break, which is sometimes it's like I feel like a pro, and other times I genuinely don't know how to finish an interview. It's like in real life where you mess up with conversations, like Logan hangs up and it's like, all right, well, catch you on the flip side. Nice guy. Anyways, genuinely, I don't know what I was doing. I don't know. It is what it is. Jake laughing at me. All right. Here is your caller question. What's up? What is the Seahawks' biggest problem? Here's what I love most about this, Jake, is not only do we have full phone lines, shout out to you guys, and those will keep rotating through, so don't stop calling. I'll give the number out again. The best part is on the Mac and Jack's text line with people who can't call in, there are so many different answers, and I think all of them are valid, but everyone is very confident that their answer is correct, including myself.
Which is the best part of sports radio.
All right. So let's go ahead and get this started with Evan in Puyallup. Evan, what's the big problem here with the Seahawks?
I think it's honestly Pete Carroll and kind of maybe John Schneider a little bit too, but I just feel like the big issue is we have different people. We've acquired different people. We haven't drafted well. We got Eskridge, who I like, but he doesn't return kicks. He doesn't return punts. We don't use him on offense. So we got this guy, but we don't use him. And we could have got other players in the draft instead of him. So just things like that. The defense continues to get worse and worse since the LOB left. It's just a lot of stuff doesn't make sense to me. And I just feel like you got to keep Jamal Adams. I like him. I think he's a great player. We gave up a lot to get him. I feel like we can't get rid of him. And I feel like you can't get rid of Russell Wilson unless he, like, refuses to stay here because he's just phenomenal and franchise elite quarterbacks don't grow on trees. But
all right,
other
Evan,
than that, I think you can get rid of everything.
Evan, do you look at Pete Carroll because it sounds like a couple things. You're talking about, drafting. You're talking about defensive performance. Do you look at it as it's just the constant that Pete Carroll's been here and you've seen a lot of these problems?
Yeah, it just doesn't seem like anything gets better. Right. It seems like it gets worse. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, I see. I hear you, Evan. All right, thanks for calling in. Jake, one of the more usually the three most popular answers whenever I ask this question are Pete Carroll, Russell Wilson, and John Schneider, which makes sense. The three guys right at the top, the three guys who have been there a decade. But Evan, echoing one of those, saying, like, look, coaching and it's hard not to point to Pete Carroll when, you know, if roster acquisition and building is another problem, well, he's part of that too.
Yeah, I think one of the other things that you're looking at is just, you know, the thing overall with Evan, what he said, the bottom line is nothing has gotten better. And I think that strikes to me because when you talk about this team and progressing and talking about the same issues, talking about, you know, where they're struggling in certain aspects, that to me is a big problem. And are you progressing? Are you progressing? Are you building? And right now with this franchise, they have not been able to do that, you know, for quite some time. And so I think that they have been able to make the best of of tough situations and, you know, made the most with less at times. But, you know, to overall Evan's point, I do agree that they have not gotten better. They have not improved.
From the 360, that's the easiest answer, but it's not the right one. Oh, wow, 360, call in then. Bruce in Bonnie Lake. Bruce, what's the Seahawks' biggest problem? Hey, Bruce.
How you guys doing? Happy Thanksgiving to Stacy and Jake.
Same to you.
First of
Bruce,
all,
Bruce, right back at you. Right back at you, brother.
You mentioned you try to be always right. That's typical for a woman. You women are always right. I've been married 34 years, and she's never failed. But
that's right. I'm always correct.
Anyway, my comment is I felt like the defense was playing a little tentative. Like the only one that I saw big time was 54. You know, he's always in the middle and doing what he has to do. But it seemed like everybody's looking at one another saying, well, who's making this play and who's making that play? Also, on the offense, they've got to get a little bit help for Russ, man. he can see the field fine. He had a miss, a couple of missed throws, like you were saying, Jake, to the big guy, 14, and you know they'll get through it. It's just one of those things. You got a lot of new faces, a lot of young people. They'll get through it.
All right. Thanks for the call, Bruce. Bruce saying, look, protection not been great. You've got some young guys. And not only that, but they're just playing a little too tentative on defense. That's not the kind of defense that's got them a championship before. Jake, what say you?
Well, I would say that, obviously came on with Bruce just bringing the energy, bringing the positive vibes. I really appreciate that, Bruce. And in a very tough, down, dour, Monday here. But I think that when you're talking about defensively, there was a lot of that. There was a lot of guys that were finger pointing again and saying, hey, what's going on here? Why aren't you in the right spots? I'm expecting you to be here. There wasn't, you know, a whole lot of guys stepping up and making big plays or taking upon themselves to make plays. So I do see that at times. Offensively, I just think there's so many issues, you know, from top to bottom as the reason why this group has not been performing up to the standard this year. And it's just really disappointing. And they've got to, there's nothing that I see that they can really build upon that, you know, makes me think that this can be such a quick change. This is something that is going to be a week to week thing to figure out, okay, is the offense going to show up this week or not?
Going to another Bruce in, DJ, am I reading this right? In Allen? So he is Bruce in Allen.
Yes, I was also very confused as well.
Okay.
Yes.
Not Bruce Allen. Going to Bruce in Allen. Bruce, what's the Seahawks' biggest problem?
Yeah, it's Allen spelled A-L-L-Y-N. Nobody knows about this little town. I'm over on the other side of the town.
Love it, love it.
So, listen, I've been a serious football fan for like about 62 years, and there's kind of a common thread. And I come from a neighborhood where John Clayton is from there too. The Pittsburgh Steelers is where I grew up. So this common thread, it's our offense. Our defense really is doing pretty well. And when you're spending that much time on the field, there's just no way. It's just not fair. But the key to the whole thing. But, you know, everybody points to they're looking at the effect, but to me, the cause is the lack of rhythm and chemistry, and that all starts on the O-line. Mm. And that O-line, it's not a question of who's not doing their job and who's not doing a good job and who doesn't have talent. It's a question of working together and knowing one another instinctively, and that doesn't, Jake is right, that it's not something that you fix overnight, yeah. But it's also, It's something that I have not noticed the Seahawks particularly focused on nurturing, because that's what it takes. It's like that's the one aspect of football. You gotta be a farmer. You gotta be patient enough and pay attention to each plant and see how this is working and make the most of it in that respect. Everything else flows from that. Even if you don't have a star running back, if your O-line is working, with chemistry and connected to one another, everything else branches off from that, and you have a rhythm.
All right.
That's my feeling.
Now, Bruce, let me ask you this real quick, because I'm curious about this, and I agree with everything that you're saying. Do you view this as a scheme issue as to why they're not working well together, or do you view this as more of a talent issue as to why they're not working together? That rhythm, that timing, all the things that you just mentioned.
You know, I don't think. Either of those things is really the problem. And I think that may be the problem. That those are the only two things people focus on, you know, the scheme or the talent. And what I'm saying to you is that you can have a, you know, fairly talented group of individuals, and you can have a good scheme. But if those people on that O-line don't have a really special connection to one another, so that they instinctively know what, you know, who's doing what in what gap. And because here's the thing that people don't realize. The defensive line can see what's going on in the backfield. The O-line cannot. They do not have eyes in the back of their head. And that is really kind of what you need I'm sorry. I know everybody wants a nice, clear, easy answer to this, and there isn't.
No, there really isn't. Bruce, thank you for the call.
Thank you for the call. Here's the thing. Yeah. I agree with Bruce that chemistry is an important aspect of it. I agree that, you know, development from that side and the nurturing of that side is something that does not get talked about enough. But the other side of it is, look, it does come down to those two things, though. It's either you have the talent and they're not executing well together, but you can work through and get that talent to come out. Or the other way that you can help develop that chemistry is through the scheme. And the one thing that I point to is that they have no identity offensively. So how can you, as an offensive line, develop that rhythm and that chemistry when there's nothing that you could really hang your hat on and say, this is who we are, this is what we can build off of, here's our foundation. And right now, that to me has been a big problem for this group as a whole. The offensive line has certainly underperformed. They have not lived up to the expectations. But part of it is identity, and the other part of it is, I just think, you know, playing-wise, you know, winning one-on-one battles, understanding how to work well together in twists and stunts, with which Arizona challenged them multiple times, Stacey. I didn't see them pick up one really cleanly throughout the game in obvious pass situations, and that's gonna make it very hard on your offense to be effective in third down situations and in obvious pass situations.
Yeah, I think. Talent acquisition is a big problem there, but I'll credit Bruce with this. First of all, it's a really cool take, and secondly, I think this is probably Bruce's opinion is the closest to what I think Pete Carroll's is right now, which is feeling like, look, I've got a lot of the right pieces. I may not have a stacked roster, but I got a lot of the right pieces, and I have a plan that I know can work and that everyone understands, and we're all on board with it, and yet week in and week out, it's not working. And I don't know why. Is it time? Is it time guys need to spend together? Is it mistakes in the moment? Like it sounds like Pete Carroll is flummoxed and frustrated as to why a solid week of practice and a lot of the right pieces isn't equating to a win. And I personally like the way that Bruce said, look, it doesn't have to be scheme or talent. Jake, I know you disagree, but I like the way he phrased it. It doesn't have to be scheme or talent, but maybe that's a bigger issue if it's neither, right? Because then it's just something not working, and then you don't
Correct.
Know what it is. You don't know what the answer is. All right. Going to Dave in Seattle. Dave, what's the Seahawks' biggest problem?
Well, getting back to another call, I would say – I would have said talent, not schemes, because primarily injuries on offense. But then losing the defensive end from last year, that was huge. The defense is just different now. You can't get the rush from Jamal the same way. He had 9.5 sacks last year because he was. The defense.
Yeah. All right, Dave, thanks for the call. Dave saying, look, the defense hasn't been the same, and when you're a defensive-minded head coach, a lot of the success of your entire program, offense and defense, is going to stem from that solid defense. Jake, how many times have we said Pete Carroll's plan offensively or punting or being conservative works just fine when you've got the Legion of Boom?
You do, and when you're able to affect the quarterback, you're able to get him down to the ground, when you're able to really harass and make them feel uncomfortable, it makes your defense better, and it makes that defensive scheme that he has better, and right now, that's not what they do. They got a chance to, you know, get their hands on Colt McCoy, weren't able to bring him down, but on a consistent basis, they have not been able to get to the quarterback and affect the quarterback as much as they would like, and they've been dead last in terms of sack percentage. They're close to bottom of the league in terms of sacks in general, and that's not a winning formula for the defensive scheme that Pete Carroll has here.
All right, back to the phone lines with Eli in Covington. Eli, what's the big problem here?
Well, I certainly don't know everything about football, but looking back, it seems like once Pete was able to kind of take more control is when things started to go downhill. So I'm curious to get your guys' opinion. Do you think that this all happening right now is going to help Pete decide to get somebody to help him to decide when to call timeouts, when to throw challenge flags, who to draft, to give up a little bit of that control and get some help? Because obviously it's just too much for him at this point.
Good question, Eli.
Oof. Eli, you're striking a chord here. This is something that, you know, if you ask Pete Carroll that same question, he'd say, well, that's why I brought back Carl Smith this year, somebody that I really trust who is in charge of helping me make those decisions in terms of in-game situations and calling timeout and when to do some of those things. But Eli, there's also that side of it where, you know, with I don't know who is telling Pete Carroll or allowing him to throw those challenge flags when they're clear, obvious losses. In situations where you know you're going to need those timeouts down the road, or if that's just Pete saying, "Look, I'm going to take my shot here. I'm going to take a chance," and thinking positively in those moments, I'm not sure. But in regards to the overall power and the overall structure of how things are set up, Pete does have a lot of power. Pete does have a lot of sway. Pete does, you know, I don't really know exactly who Pete is using as a sounding board to give him critical analysis as to how things are going and to how he's doing and to, you know, get down to the nitty gritty from that aspect to have a 1,000-foot view of this program and where it currently stands and how they need to improve moving forward. But Eli, I do agree that not having that is a big problem. And I don't know how you address that moving forward, but I do think that, you know, Paul Allen, that was a role that he played. And, you know, I don't believe that's been here since his passing. So I do think that that is something that I would be anxious to know the answer to that question.
Yeah. And I like the question too, because it's like part of how Eli phrases it is like, is this inevitably kind of a good thing, like a silver lining, because it forces change? And I don't, the thing is, I don't know whether it will. And I lean toward no, just because I don't know, it's just Pete Carroll and most head coaches, like they believe in their program and that's part of how they believe in success. And you're going to find that anywhere. But I like the core of the question, which is, look, nothing changes when it's working, whether or not you agree with it or not. Nothing changes when it's working. When it doesn't work, does it change? Does someone change that?
Right.
Going to Sherry?
The way that I think, before we get to Sherry here, yeah, is I just think it results in probably doubling down. Here's my philosophy. Here's what I believe. And I'm going to stick to that. I'm going to stick to my guns more so than anything else, because, you know, me trying to compromise and do it, you know, other ways has not worked out for me if I'm in Pete Carroll's head and from his perspective.
Going to Sherry in Issaquah. Sherry, what's the big problem here with the Seahawks?
Well, hi. I'm just letting you guys know that I'm a really big fan of, I listen to you often.
Oh, thanks, Sherry.
Thanks, Sherry.
I think that one of the things that I see happening is I don't feel like they're very responsive in the moment. I feel like they kind of lose track of what the context is, and that's both sides of the ball. You know, I wonder about a comment that Tyler Lockett made where he said that they watch film, and then when the other teams come in and play, that they do something totally different. And I don't know if it's because the Seahawks are so predictable or they just don't have enough in their bag of tricks to mix it up and do something surprising for the other teams, but it makes me kind of wonder.
Yeah.
Now, that being said, I do have to say one thing. You know, as a person who grew up in San Diego with the Padres and the Chargers, I am not a blow-it-up and to start from scratch person. I really am a half full, and I would just like to see things fixed. I don't really want to see everybody go.
Yeah. Mm. Sherry, I love your call, because I kind of agree on both fronts, and I think I still look at, like, drafting as the biggest share of that, but the no adjustments in game, I love her mentioning Tyler Lockett, because Jake, one of my favorite things is accidentally honest Tyler Lockett. Tyler Lockett is the nicest person. I'm telling you, in real life, exactly how he seems, the nicest person I've ever interviewed, and never, like, not a bad bone in his body. And yet some of the most fascinating insights to this team have come from press conferences where Tyler Lockett is just being accidentally honest, like accidentally throwing Schottenheimer under the bus, not really throwing him under the bus, but like talking about a lack of adjustments last year. He made a similar comment this year, and it's like, Tyler, what are you doing? But also, thank you so much, because this is fascinating insight, and I love that you're being so honest. And a lot of what he's been saying is exactly what Sherry's pointing to, that they're just not making enough or the right adjustments in game.
Yeah, I you know, the thing is I would say adjusting in game, but I don't see what Tyler's saying here in terms of them running things completely different. And the reason why I can say that is because I do study this stuff, and then I do look at, you know, opponents each and every single week and what they're doing coverage wise, how the offense and how the defense can take advantage and all these different things. And then going back and reviewing this, and I didn't see Arizona do anything wildly different or drastic through the game that should be overwhelming to the Seahawks. What I would say is, from Tyler's perspective, it probably feels that way because, one, you don't have an identity. Number two, the game plan that you have going into the week just isn't working. And so why is that? Why are you not able to execute in the way that you draw it up and the way that you practice it and everything, you know, going into that? And so I just, you know, when it comes down to it, I believe it comes down to execution. I believe it comes down to the simple thought of everybody doing their job right, from Russell Wilson making the right decisions to offensive line doing their part in, you know, their run blocking and pass protection, to the receivers doing their job in getting to the right spots and making the catches when the time comes to them. I mean, the execution part of it has been suboptimal all season long, and that has been the surprising aspect to me, because I do believe that they are far more talented than what their execution level has been. When you have issues with execution, Stacey, I'll give you an example. When I was at BYU, when I was at Miami versus when I was at Kansas, the difference between those three places in college was that at Kansas we were awful because we couldn't execute to save our lives. We couldn't execute. We would, all 11 guys at a given point in critical situations would not be executing at a high level. And so we would constantly be shooting ourselves in the foot. And that is a program that perpetually has been at the bottom of the Big 12. I'm seeing that same thing happen with the Seattle Seahawks, and that is something that is just, it's not acceptable to the standard of which they have offensively and what they're capable of doing.
All right, if you are on the line, do not hang up. We're going to get back to callers next. We're going to start with Kurt. Kurt in Lake Stevens, I see you there. No one hang up. I'll get back to you guys in just a couple of minutes. Don't go anywhere.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross.
Very interactive final hour here. We've got What I Need to Know coming up next, where I'll be taking all of your text questions, any question you want, 206-421-3776. Let's get back to the phone lines, though, with Kurt in Lake Stevens. Kurt, what is the Seahawks' biggest problem?
Hi, guys. I'm going to go right to the misses in the draft. It absolutely, to me, you can win with a quarterback making as much as Russell Wilson is making, but you have to hit on those draft picks, at least some of them. And I go back to Malik McDowell. Earl Thomas's time in Seattle was coming to an end, and you had his heir apparent sitting there, Buda Baker. And not only do the Seahawks not take him, he goes to the Cardinals, and that was horrible. The Jamal Adams trade for me was a good idea, just because I don't trust this front office with those first-round picks anymore. So let's use a couple of them and get a player, a quality player in Jamal Adams. So I think that you have to be able to hit on some of those draft picks, and they just haven't. Lastly, yesterday in Pete's press conference, when you have a head coach that goes up there and says that he's not prepared for this, and it's Pete Carroll, and he admits that he's not doing a good job coaching, I mean, that's linked directly to the failure to adapt, adjust, and for his talent to not perform. So when you have a front office miss and then you don't have a coaching staff who can, you know, make those adjustments, this is where you are. And I know that a few callers ago, she doesn't want to start all over, but I see that pretty much the only way. I don't see this team coming back in the next 2-3 years and being able to do anything more than maybe get to a playoff. But you've got a division in the NFC West that's clearly lapping you, and you're just basically look like it's sitting still.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Kurt. I agree with Kurt on drafting, absolutely. Especially, I like that Kurt mentioned having that big quarterback contract. When you're paying your quarterback that much money, it really, really matters that you strike good in free agency and in the draft. Well, not good.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I fully agree with you, you know, on that, Stacey. And that's, you know, really when, you know, and Kurt, for that matter, on your big point here. And you know, you talked about the idea of replenishing and rebuilding. And every piece that they talked to, that they used to rebuild, replenish, and then you look back at some of the misses, I mean, it just – it's hard. It's really hard to see that and to look back and sift through that and to see why they're in the position that they are. And that's why, you know, the argument that, oh, you can't have a winning team if you pay your quarterback has frustrated me so much, because that takes the burden off of the people who made that decision and know what they have to do in order to make that work, which is to draft well, which is to, you know, really be smart in the way that you go about, you know, your free agency each and every single offseason, to find the right picks, the right, you know, quality players to help improve this team or to make a difference each and every single year. Like, those are the things that really, you know, drive me crazy. And Stacey, I look back at what Kurt is saying and what you said earlier today, and that to me I agree with you. It's the number one reason why they're in the position they are in today.
All right, let's get to Riley and Kent. Riley, what's the big problem?
I very much agree with the last caller with front office issues, and I've been an emotional just Seahawks fan. I don't really know much about the day-to-day. But just these last couple of years, I mean, I think Pete's era has came and gone, and I love Pete, and I think every real Seahawks fan will always have that love for him, because, you know, he was the first one to get us a chip, and I think he was, you know, the biggest role in that, to be honest, because he's the lead of the defense. But I'm kind of at the end of my stick with him, and I think there's a gold mine in Kansas City, Eric Bieniemy just sitting there, waiting for a head coaching job, and we have a lot of weapons that are pretty attractive to a coach like that. So I think that we should hop on the opportunity and kind of write this season off and start over personally.
All right. Thanks for the call, Riley. Jake, your response. And then we'll jump to these next two callers.
The hard part with that, with Riley, is, look, I don't disagree that there is going to have to be a dramatic decision that is made. And I wish I could be on the same wavelength as Sherry and say, hey, you can keep this together and you know, everything's going to work out and you just need to make adjustments, not blow this thing up. And I would really love for that to be the case, but I don't see the evidence to support it. I don't see the evidence to support that idea. And so, you know, with Riley, he talks about Pete Carroll. Okay, I understand getting new eyes and a new sense on that, but also that is going to be a tremendous risk and a tremendous challenge to replace a Hall of Fame level coach. And, you know, Riley, maybe you're right. Maybe this is a Mike McCarthy, Aaron Rodgers situation. You go find Matt LaFleur, your version of it, and you go on and win and all those different things. That could be it. But, you know, that's why, to me, these next seven games are going to be so critical in the evaluation process for how the Seahawks, what they need to do to move forward and progress as a franchise, as an organization, because what they're doing right now just isn't working. And you can't continue to keep turning to yourself and say, oh, Stacey, if you know, it's going to work out. They just make one or two different decisions and expect them to go ahead and do that, because they've kind of shown their strategies and the way that they want to go about it through the draft and through free agency. And so what evidence do we have that they are going to actually, you know, pull through and find the right, you know, button to press in the offseason to get them over the hump?
All right, I'm going to go two back-to-back here, Jake. So let's get through these final two. They've been on hold for so long. Shout out to you guys. Sean in Centralia, what is the Seahawks' biggest problem?
Okay, it's not a simple answer, and I know that the line is an issue, and we could discuss it another day, but if you don't mind, can I make a two-part question to Jake?
Yeah, no problem.
Okay, Jake, you know, when a pitcher loses his fastball, he's got to be able to mix in his other pitches to extend his career. Since the last half of last year and most of this year, teams have schemed against Russell's strength. Now, meaning the deep ball. And they've done a pretty good job against that. My question to you is, I thought we understood that he was going to have more ability to change plays at the line of scrimmage and do more of that. And if that is the case, is he having a difficult time changing, you know, his way of quarterbacking to get away from his strength and be able to develop the other? And lastly, on that scale, I guess the overall question is not to badmouth Russ. it's just wondering if he's playing a part in this, not being able to, you know, change up at the line of scrimmage on a consistent basis away from the play call that came in.
Okay, Sean, let me answer this the best way I can because there's so much there, and I want to answer this to give you the best answer in terms of what you're getting at, and I think I know, you know, kind of what you're asking here. So, number one, Russell Wilson has not helped his cause. Okay, so I'll say that first and foremost. He has not helped his cause in this situation in terms of, you know, at times his decision making. He could be his own best friend in these situations in terms of, I think, take what is given to him at different points, allowing the game to come to him, you know, and not forcing things at times. But I also, to your question, your main question is in regards to changing at the line of scrimmage. Yes, Sean, that has been a topic of conversation, and there has been talk about that being more of a featured piece of the offense. Yet that has not been what they have followed through with. So Russell, in theory, should have more ability to change plays at the line of scrimmage. The talk has been that that's what he would be given, but they have been wildly inconsistent with allowing him to do so and to allow him to truly take that over. And so, Sean, it is frustrating to me as I watch the game, the drives and the opportunities that he was given to have more control at the line of scrimmage, they were more successful. And throughout the season, they have gone kind of back and forth through that process. And so I do believe that they need to lean into that more because I do believe that Russell Wilson has been wildly successful with that, not just through the passing game, but in the running game as well, getting them in the right run looks and being able to make sure that they have a winning advantage, whether they're throwing or running the football. So, Sean, not as much as what it was hyped up to be, and I think that that has been a big disappointment for the season.
All right, last quick one here, Jack in Kent. Jack, you are the last caller. Thank you so much. Shout out to you for holding so long. So what is the Seahawks' biggest problem?
John and Pete, and that philosophy. It's the philosophy all around in every phase of the organization. You can't win till the fourth quarter. Why we got to be so passive? I didn't like it from day one, even when they were winning. Now the numbers have come back. We pulled out so many close games with Russell. Now the numbers have come back to the pack with a realistic number. You're not winning those close games anymore. I mean, and why can't you win a game in the first quarter? If you score 28 points in the first quarter, look at Russell's record for going into the half with the lead. The defense, don't get beat deep. Why not attack? It's a passive philosophy. It's done. John and Pete has to go, and Russell can be next because they caught up to him too.
All right, Jack and Kent with the fire call. We're going to start with a response to that call.
That's a great way to end right there.
All right, so we'll start with a response to Jack's and what I need to know, but please keep sending your questions in. 206-421-3776. Text those questions in right now. That's next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
It's What I Need to Know, brought to you by All Red Heating, Cooling, Electric. It's a time for your guys' questions, 206-421-3776. That's the Mac and Jack's text line. First, though, that final call, Jake, was fire. Whether or not you agreed with it, Jack sounded off.
Yes, he did. I mean, he was calling for everybody, too. I mean, he was
like, Russ can go, too.
Yeah.
That's great.
When he finished it. You know, it's one of the things that has been hard to watch, especially over the last 4 years, to watch this team go from being the baddest dudes on the block, being the aggressors, being the one that dictate to other teams how the game is going to be played, what style it's going to be played with, knowing that an opponent, when they play the Seattle Seahawks, they're going to have to buckle up their chin strap and know that they're going to get into a war. To see that all change, them play passively. I mean, Jack's not wrong. I mean, they do play passively defensively. And that has been a big change. And you've really taken the stinger out of this defense in that aspect. You know, offensively, it's been the whole conversation of, okay, aggressiveness versus you know, playing rope-a-dope and, you know, setting themselves up and body blows and, you know, trying to wear guys down for the end of games. I mean, there's all these debates. But I do think in that aspect, you know, it does come down to Jack, you know, talking through it, you know, from a passive perspective as to how this team improves, how it gets better stylistically, how do they win games. And I would love to see them flip that script again and become the aggressor and find guys that, you know, come in from day one and, you know, command a serious presence about them, and watch this team when the moment they step on the field, that you feel their presence. And that is just something we have not seen from this team. And I don't know what the right answer is to get that turned around and to get that changed, but Jack certainly has a point, Stacey.
All right, what I need to know, Jake, this question is for you. Why can't Russ throw open passes in rhythm? It's not just the OL, and Goff tore the Hawks defense up with the same OC.
Well, I would agree with that in terms of I think that there are times that, you know, things happen in rhythm where he doesn't see it and he's not throwing it. But I would say that that is drastically overblown than as much time as that happens. Right. So everything is exacerbated by the record. Everything is exacerbated by the comments he made in the offseason. And so, you know, you're going to be looked at and scrutinized very, very heavily. And obviously, when the offense is not performing in this way, it's you got to point to the quarterback, right? What I would say is that in terms of him coming back, it was great to see the improvement from last week in Green Bay to this week against the Arizona Cardinals. It's still not good enough. It's still not anywhere near the level of play that the Seahawks need him to play at. But, you know, for all the concerns that we had about him and his finger and all those things, I don't think you can point to those as an issue or a concern. Now it's, okay, they've got to continue to keep building. They've got to continue to, you know, figure out a way where they can build an identity and that Russell and this offense through the passing game can be explosive on a consistent basis, that they can get the completions that are underneath in these coverages, because, you know, the Washington football team is going to challenge them that way as well on Monday night. So, you know, these last seven games, Russell Wilson, this offense certainly have a lot to prove, and they need to, you know, really get things turned around.
What I need to know, think DK is gone after his rookie contract? He's obviously not used to losing, so maybe he'll try to go elsewhere. I'm going to quickly give my answer to that one, which is I think it is less dependent. If DK is trying to find a place where he won't lose, I don't know what to tell you. I think DK is a phenomenal player. I think his ceiling is sky high. Love watching him play. But the NFL is built for parity. It is in the NFL's best financial interest that the league is a league of parity. This isn't like college where you can just stay with a team that's dominant forever. So I don't know where you're going to go that you're not going to lose. It's going to happen. I don't mean just single games. I mean like struggling seasons. And finally, Jake, I think that's far more connected to which quarterback is here in Seattle. Is there a franchise guy or not?
Is Russell the franchise guy or not?
No. I think that the decision DK would make about whether or not he re-signs here after his rookie season or signs to an extension,
gotcha,
is far more dependent on is there a franchise quarterback or not, which I think is a way more fair reason to make the decision than I don't want to lose.
Yeah, no, I certainly agree. Right? I certainly agree with that. And, you know, it's also, does DK Metcalf feel good about the direction of this offense? You know, the quarterback, the offense in general. I mean, I think all of that, you know, factors in. And when DK Metcalf has the mentality and the goals and the belief in himself that he can be one of the best receivers to ever play the game, are you a part of an organization that is going to help you, you know, make those, you know, steps in that direction? And I believe that all of that is going to be factored in on his part and how he evaluates it. And I think he's going to be very protective of his future and how, you know, who's going to help him accomplish those goals.
All right, that'll do it for us today. Wyman and Bob coming your way next. So don't go anywhere on 710 ESPN Seattle.